Jen's the mother of two teens. Her online shopping cart is always full of amps and auxiliary cables, so you might think she's funding her kids' garage band. But what you don't know is she's actually the one shredding on stage. With TransUnion's 360-degree view of consumer identity, you can get a clear picture of your marketing audience and reach people like Jen with messages that are more headbanger, less homebody. See how TransUnion is bringing clarity to marketing chaos through deeper insights, smarter reach, and precise measurement at transunion.com/clarity.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Set in the backdrop of New York City's speakeasy scene in the 1930s, The Many Murders of Michael Molloy covers the incredible true story of an Irishman who simply refused to die. The author of this compelling and stranger-than-fiction story, Simon Reid, joins me now on the line. Simon, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. I describe this as a ripping yarn, and that's what it is. It's an extraordinary story.
Thank you so much. It's extraordinary, and it's also very bizarre. When I stumbled across the story some years ago, I couldn't believe it. It's a very strange tale, like you said, about an Irishman who refuses to die, Michael Molloy. He's a gentleman from County Donegal. He's about 60 years old. He moves to New York in the early 1900s. We don't know much about him. We know more about his death than his life. But what we do know is that he has a very bad drinking problem. And by his own admission, he doesn't have any friends or family. And so he spends his time hanging out in New York City speakeasies, particularly.
Now, will you explain for our younger listeners who maybe have never seen an Al Capone movie or whatever and don't know what a speakeasy is? One suggests, I suppose, that speakeasy meant you kept your voice low because you were doing something illegal.
Sure. Well, a speakeasy is a bar. The story takes place during Prohibition, when America outlawed alcohol. It was an attempt to sort of legislate morality. It ultimately failed. But between 1920 and 1933, alcohol was illegal in the United States. And so thousands of speakeasies cropped up over the country, hundreds of thousands of speakeasies. And this was a place where people could go and get illegal liquor. And the liquor was usually of very poor quality. You know, this was not like high quality stuff. And speakeasies ranged from the sort of upper class type establishment where you could sit in plush leather booths and listen to jazz and eat oysters and steak and drink champagne. And then it sort of ranged to the lower class type of establishments, which is what Michael Molloy hanged out in. And he hung out at in a speakeasy in the Bronx owned by a gentleman named Tony Marino, which was a very sort of shabby establishment. And it was frequented by a sort of a criminal clientele, folks with long criminal records who didn't pay their bills often. And it was a speakeasy that was on the verge of financial collapse.
And now you came across this story originally in a report in the New York Times, and you reproduce the headline in your prologue. Insurance murder charged to five, tale of horror is told.
Yeah, that's the article I actually came across. So I actually came across the story my last year of university many years ago. I was researching a class project and I was going through an old edition of the New York Times and I came across that article. And I can't even remember what the project was that I was researching, but that article immediately seized my attention and I read it. I just could not believe the story it detailed, and I sort of tucked it away, and I thought, I've got to write a book about this someday. And when I finally got around to researching the story and going to New York City to do more research, the story turned out to be even crazier than I imagined. It was a big deal back in the day, and it was covered by all of New York City's newspapers and big front page stories.
And it's funny, given it was the 20th century, after all, that one of the main characters, Tony Marino, you actually have a picture of him.
Yes, we have a mugshot of Tony Marino. We have a mugshot of Francis Pasqua, who was a crooked undertaker who was involved in this scheme to kill Michael Molloy. And we even have a poor picture of, we have the only picture we know of Michael Molloy, which is a picture of him in the morgue. But there are some good photographic evidence from the story. But yeah, you're right. It took place 100 years ago, which it's quite funny to think
So, you know, I mean, what is not really known about the main character, Michael Molloy, little enough known from Donegal, down on his luck, in his, what, in his 60s, and very fond of a drop.
He's very fond of his drinking. That's really the one thing we know. Again, by his own admission, he didn't have any friends or family, which sort of makes him a target for this plot, which is hatched by Tony Marino and some other folks in his speakeasy. And because he is fond of a drink, Marino and this gang that he has behind him think that maybe they can take an insurance policy out on Michael Molloy and have him drink himself to death, and then they can cash in the policy and collect the money and sort of live the high life. But things do not work out that way.
Now, the thing is about Michael Molloy, he had an extraordinary capacity for drink. You describe him as an alcoholic's alcoholic. And he was really fond of a drop, but they think that they can just use ordinary booze, whether it's bootleg booze or not, but it would be sold in the speakeasy, that alone, sufficient quantities thereof, would be enough for him to drink himself to death. But no.
That is correct. They look at Michael Molloy and they think this guy is one whiskey bottle away from keeling over. And so what Tony Marino does is he gives Michael Molloy an open tab at his speakeasy and says, "Hey, Mikey, all your drinks, they're on the house, they're free." And, to Michael Molloy, this is absolutely fantastic news. And he starts drinking day and night. And what happens is he actually starts drinking his way through Marino's inventory. Marino's suddenly got a supply problem because he can't replace the liquor fast enough. And it becomes very apparent after about a week that Michael Molloy is not going to drink himself to death.
And it would appear that Michael Molloy, after having a night in the speakeasy drinking to his heart's content, when he emerges the next morning, he's fresh as a daisy.
He's absolutely fresh as a daisy. No ill effects, no hangover. It gives him like a will to live. It almost like energizes him. And so he's back there every morning, first thing at the bar with his glass at the ready. And, Marino and the gang can't believe it.
So something stronger is required.
Something much stronger is required. So what they decide to do is they decide to taint Michael Molloy's whiskey with wood alcohol. So this is basically used for paint thinner and antifreeze. And there was a medical report released back in the day that said 1 ounce of this stuff was enough to blind a human being. And so what they start doing is they start filling his glass half with whiskey and then half with wood alcohol, thinking that this will do the trick.
And Molloy's response is, "This doesn't taste half bad. This is pretty okay stuff."
He actually says at one point, he says, "Best stuff I ever tasted." He loves it. And so this is just absolutely befuddles the gang. What they actually end up doing is they're like, "All right, you know what? Let's just not put any whiskey in his glass. Let's just give him straight wood alcohol, and that will definitely do the trick." And he even survives that.
Jen's the mother of two teens. Her online shopping cart is always full of amps and auxiliary cables, so you might think she's funding her kids' garage band. But what you don't know is she's actually the one shredding on stage. With TransUnion's 360-degree view of consumer identity, you can get a clear picture of your marketing audience and reach people like Jen with messages that are more headbanger, less homebody. See how TransUnion is bringing clarity to marketing chaos through deeper insights, smarter reach, and precise measurement at transunion.com/clarity.
Now, you say at one point, Molloy sat at the bar exuding immortality. They just can't kill him. Now, they decided to try to use a little bit of grub, a little bit of food kill him, and quite an interesting recipe they had.
They did. So, you know, like I was saying earlier, you know, some of the high-class speakeasies would have steak and lobster and oysters. Tony Marino's place, it had a tray of free oysters and sardines at the end of the bar. And so what they decide to do is to give Molloy a sandwich of sardines. But what they do is they actually take broken glass, carpet tacks, and tin shavings, and they load the sandwich up with all of that stuff, and they also leave the sardines out to make them rot. So they give him this sandwich of rotted sardines, tin shavings, broken glass, carpet tacks, and they serve it to him when he's drinking his wood alcohol, and he eats it. And of course, they're expecting him to hemorrhage and keel over, but he doesn't. He loves it. In fact, he actually asks for another sandwich. he eats multiple of these things, and he's impervious to it.
Now, in the end, and I don't know how much you want to tell the narrative, because I recommend people enjoy the yarn as it goes. But suffice it to say that he does eventually pass on to his maker. Now, does he pass on, or was he passed on?
He was passed on. The plot, I won't give too much away, but you know, the alcohol, and then the wood alcohol, and then the sandwiches loaded with metal and broken glass. That's just the tip of the iceberg. The plot gets crazier and crazier, and the attempts to kill him get more outrageous. You know, buried naked in the snow, trying to run him over with a car, and he remains oblivious the whole time to the fact that anyone's trying to kill him. But they do ultimately succeed. Just to give a stretch of how long this, you know, they hatch the plot to try and kill him in July 1932. They don't kill him until February 1933. So, you know, this guy hangs on for a very long time, but they do ultimately succeed in getting rid of him. I won't say how, but after they get rid of him,
now they have to cash in.
Now they've got to cash in. And, you know, this is not a group of smooth operators, these guys. The press dubbed them the Murder Trust, which sort of makes them sound like slick gangsters, but they were completely inept and just they were quite idiotic, really. And they cash in and they start arguing over who gets what in terms of the payout. And that is what ultimately leads to their downfall.
And the insurance, of course, company, they're always reluctant to pay out in any situation, but particularly, I suppose, when they have such a bizarre situation. And of course, these guys are unmasked. How did the trial go? Did they have any defense at all?
The trial went terribly. They all pointed fingers at one another and all, you know, had various stories as to whose idea it was. But ultimately, they are all found guilty. Two of the members of the gang are actually turn state's evidence and testify against the others. So they get lengthy prison sentences, and the rest of the gang sort of end up sitting in Old Sparky, which is the electric chair at Sing Sing Prison in New York. So things did not go well for them.
Well, it's an extraordinary story. The researching into this tale, though, must have been very difficult, and but also very rewarding, obviously.
It was a lot of fun because I got to spend a lot of time in New York, a city that I love, and I'd fly out there whenever I'd you know, could sort of muster the airline ticket and have days off. It was a lot of the research was done at the New York City Historical Society and the New York Public Library, going through their newspaper archives. And then a lot of it was done at the Bronx County Courthouse, where the trial happened. And they have an archive in the basement, and that's where they had the police files and the court transcripts. And just an interesting aside, after the book came out originally here in the States, I got an email from the widow of one of the killers. Turns out we were both living in the San Francisco Bay Area at the time, and she invited me over for dinner. And she was a lovely lady.
And did you get her to eat the food first?
She was married to a gentleman who was hired to run Michael Malloy over. And so when I went over to their house, they had a sign up on the front door. It said, "Please come round to the back." I thought, "Oh God!" So I went round to the backyard, and she was out there, and she and her adult children were there, and they had a picnic table set up in the backyard. They were grilling. And on the picnic table, they had a diorama of a New York City street with a little taxi cab running over a plastic man. And they gave me the taxi cab as a keepsake, which I now keep on my desk as a good luck charm. But they were lovely people. But yeah, I made sure they took the first bite before I tucked in. Yeah.
And obviously, they loved the book.
They did. They did. And the gentleman that she was married to, he was one of the people who turned state's evidence. And afterwards, he became, if I remember correctly, became a used car salesman. Which seems appropriate.
Anyway, look, it is, as I say, it's a ripping yarn. It's called The Many Murders of Michael Molloy, subtitled The Unbelievable True Story of the Irish Man Who Refused to Die. Its author is Simon Reid. It's published by Gill. And Simon, thank you very much for joining us on the programme to tell us that tale.
Pat, thanks so much. Really enjoyed it.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Greg's car shopping. And since he lives in Florida, your marketing's probably pushing something a little sporty. Too bad you don't know he's planning a move to Alaska. Turns out, marketing without a clear picture of your customer is like driving a convertible in the Arctic. A bad idea. Learn how TransUnion's 360-degree view of customer identity is bringing clarity to marketing chaos through deeper insights, smarter reach, and precise measurement at transunion.com/clarity.